You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
How would you describe what's going on in the stock markets right now?
Well, the markets are right at their highs, and we're getting a lot of good news up here and a little bit of divergence in some of the big indicators, like in particular Taiwan Semiconductor, which came out with their earnings today, which were good. Not taking anything away from that, but it's creating a lot of technical divergences and probably is coincident with a top, particularly since my technical work says the big name NVIDIA has already topped out and is due for a correction. I'm not saying bear market, but certainly a correction. Applied Materials, AMAT, another big high flyer, which has almost tripled here in the last year and a half, way overdone, creating some divergences. I think the market's a little vulnerable here. I mean, there are corrective numbers well below the market. We're due for a 15-20% correction at some point. We're in the first quarter. We've got the early February cycles coming up. We've got the March big cycle around the vernal equinox, which, if you remember, has been a point in the past coincident with some important trading lows. You know, exuberance is high. And then we've got a lot of, black swan potential events out there. We talked about this previously. I mean, what's going to happen with the Supreme Court and the decision on tariffs? When is that going to come out? Is it going to be good, bad, in between? How's that all going to play out? That was supposed to be due any day, and we're not hearing anything. You saw some of the big bank stocks sell off here in the last few days, having a little bit of a shakeout, particularly after Donald Trump came out with that comment about capping interest rates that credit cards can charge at 10%. Whether that'll happen or not, we don't know, but that did impact the banking stocks. We're waiting to see whether the Iranian leaders are going to be abducted and we're going to move in there the way we did Venezuela or not. That's a possibility. The Jay Powell investigation continues with the Department of Justice apparently questioning some of his responses in Congress, whether he's going to resign or whether this is all going to cool down. Who knows? But we know he's going to be history anyway after the middle part of the year. At least we hope he will be, because there's some fine print that says he could hang around at the Fed for a period of time and give everybody a lot of unneeded aggravation. Depends how vindictive he is or he isn't. Apparently there's something in the writing that allows him to stay around afterwards, even after his term expires. You have those, the big stories. Of course, the midterm elections coming up here in the U.S. Later in the year. All the politics are going back and forth here. And, if something happens that's negative for the Republican control of the Senate and the House of Representatives, then that could affect the markets later in the year. Of course, that's months away, but it's just something, we're all thinking about. And while all this is going on, Japanese interest rates are still rising, which is a big global negative. It's not really being talked about, but I don't see the Treasury bond market rallying. That means interest rates going down in any meaningful way. There's a lot of press in the last couple of days about mortgage rates coming down a little bit. So there's a little pressure. We're getting a little rally in the bonds here, not much, but we did see official reports that apparently the mortgage rates, of course, they're different here than in Canada, but just under 6%, which everybody got excited about. So you got to remember that Donald Trump mentioned the other day that he wanted one of the agencies, I'm not quite sure it would be Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or one of the big housing mortgage institutions to be buying treasury bonds and try to bring down the debt, and that would help the interest rate scenario. So there's a little pressure for that to happen, and we're seeing stocks that are sensitive to the housing industry. The big name would be Home Depot, I guess, if I had to pick one name out there. That's been popping up here a little bit. So, maybe we're getting a little encouragement on the housing front. And I guess, you know, even though the Japanese interest rates are going up and there's risk of of higher rates, I think the pressure here is to buy down bonds and do whatever we can within the U.S. to keep rates from going higher and helping that mortgage market and the housing market. So, you know, there was a little pop in the treasuries. They backed off a little bit toward the end of the day. I'm talking about the 20-year, 30-year treasury bonds, which are really the market, not what the Federal Reserve does. So that's also the other big story out there. And I guess the other big story, there's so many stories, it's just tough covering them all. Of course, the big move in silver and gold. Gold hasn't gone much in the last couple of days. Silver, he ran all the way up into the mid-90s, pulled back into the mid-80s, now back into the low 90s. And if you do chart work on it, as I mentioned a few other interviews and on my newsletter recently, I mean, we're basically in this $50 to $100 range now. We broke out after a multi-decade high at $50. We got into the mid-90s. Doesn't mean we can't go to 100 or 150, but that big breakout point on the chart technically is a sore point, and we're getting some negative divergences here. So, you know, again, I'm not saying go out and sell your silver coins or whatever, but if you're a trader, I'd be worried that we could get a shakeout here at some point in the metals and the silver market in particular, since it's so extended. So it's just a, you know, sort of a gut call on your part. If you look at the charts, do you sell here? Or you just hold your breath and expect when a pullback comes, it comes, and you can decide to add to a position at that point, or regret having not sold and wish you had sold. So tough call. But I know, speaking to a lot of local dealers in this part of the world, they're inundated by people who want to sell and take profits, rightfully so. I mean, look at silver, is basically a dog investment for decades. And suddenly out of the blue, you know, takes off. And you got to remind yourself, you know, when we had huge surges in Bitcoin or in other markets, usually when the panic hits to the upside and the buying fever gets exuberant, that's a time to get out. So a lot of dealers are being hit with people wanting to sell. And, you know, I call around and, you know, they want to give you ridiculous prices under the market because they're afraid they're going to get caught. So if silver is at 90, they want to pay you 80, you know, something ridiculous like that, because they're afraid that, who knows, maybe they're looking at the same chart and they're thinking, oh, gee, you can go to 50 and I don't want to get caught. So, you know, a lot of smart people, and it's not smart to take your profit, and not smart to, you know, you can't be accused of that if you want to just, you know, ring the register. I mean, I know people who've been buying silver since $5, you know, $15, $12, and literally sitting on it for 20, 25 years. And, you know, why not take the profit? So anyway, that's a big story, what's going to happen with silver here, you know, and gold. And, you know, my gut feeling is they're overdone. And just like the overall market has some divergences, particularly in some of the high-tech names, I think, you know, when a sell-off starts, you throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and all markets tend to pull back. So I guess my reading is I'm a little cautious here, and even though I'm not saying the bull market has ended, but, you know, there's some, you know, some divergences here to watch. The January barometer came in positive. I mean, the first few days of the year were up net. So, looking at the whole year as a whole, that's the old Yale-Hirsch January barometer early warning system. You know, Yale and I used to talk about that, you know, decades ago. So, he invented that back in 1972, I think, or 75. In any event, that's something to watch. So that sort of indicates that, yes, we could get a shakeout, but maybe for the year we'll still be, hopefully we'll still be positive. So, we're not even talking about Venezuela, what happened down there, but I guess we could touch on that. You know, crude oil rallied before, probably anticipation or knowing that the Venezuelan event was going to take place. And I mentioned that we were in, or mentioning the crude oil, oil stocks, not crude oil itself, but surprisingly crude oil went up as well. And most experts attribute that to the thinking that Iran was, it was about to fall apart and we were going to go in there and, that would drive crude oil higher, but the shares were acting better even before that. So we have that sort of hanging out there, but I think it's still, from what I can see, it's still overall scenario out there. It's still bullish for the oil stocks, not necessarily crude oil itself, though it has popped up here and looks like it may go higher anyway. So it's something to watch. And, you know, many of the big oil company stocks like at Exxon and so forth and, CVX, Chevron pay good dividends, so there's a lot of good reasons for investors to want to take a look at those anyway, regardless of what's happening with crude oil. They seem to make money regardless. So I'm just trying to cover what happened this week. So the other story is Greenland. Yeah, as we were talking off air, you know, I'd rather see us go in and take over Antarctica. We may already have done it. There's a lot of reasons to be down in Antarctica. Even going back into the 1940s when the Nazis went down there and they set up a big operation, and obviously they saw some value in Antarctica. And we followed that with Operation Paperclip, which was a big U.S. fleet that went down there after World War II and trying to find what the Nazis had been doing down in Antarctica. So there's stuff in other parts of the world besides Greenland, but I can see the logic of Greenland just like the logic of owning Alaska. You know, it covers both the east and west coasts of the United States, and there's a protective barrier of sorts. And I can see why, you know, Mr. Trump wants to go after Greenland, which we may already have, you know, access. We already have access to. We have a base there and so forth. And but I think there's a lot of insight that, you know, Russia is looking at it and China, and he wants to be in there first or in a bigger way than we're already in there. So I think that's part and parcel to the Greenland story. So just, you know, looking at the daily news environment, Jim, you know, it's really exciting times. It's really overwhelming, you know, which story is next and, which one's going to be resolved or not resolved. And it's a story a minute. It's like trading the stock market. You know, new stock pops up every 30 minutes and you got to pick the one that you want to focus on. So it's been an exciting week.
What's happening with Bitcoin?
Getting a rally. Bitcoin has recovered. You know, this is just typical markets. I mean, if you recall, we got up to 126,000 in August in Bitcoin, and which was a little short of it. It was one of my targets, but there were some higher targets out there too. So you get a washout of nearly $50,000, but this was actually, you know, $46,000 down to $80,000 in Bitcoin, and everybody on the planet is bearish, and it's over for Bitcoin. It's the same story that we've seen so many times in the last 12 or 13 years. Now sort of creeping back up again, got into the high 90s, didn't quite get, you know, I think like a 97, 98 intraday in the last day or two. A lot of charters were saying, well, if it rallies back to 100, it's probably a short and it's going to go back to 80. Well, we'll see if the charts say that. Could happen. But the point I'm making is, you know, we get these panic sell-offs, and, you know, there's a lot of manipulation involved with that. You know, there's a lot of reasons why these markets come down. You know, there's institutional insider activity. The rumors are spread. Stops are pulled. There's a big theory in market manipulation, you know, going back to some of the old textbooks that you want to read about from Bernard Baruch's days and all the legendary market manipulators of the 1920s and 1930s that I read about and actually had the fortune to study with one of these guys many, many years ago who was involved with that way back in the last century. But when you're trying to accumulate a position in the markets and you have the power to do so, you actually force the market down, you hit the bids, you set off stops, you trigger selling, and then you're under the market with your buy programs ready to pick up things at significant discounts once the selling comes to an end. So the theory of manipulation is if you want to buy something, you drive it down to buy it, and you do whatever you can to drive it down, whether it's news or, like I say, the futures markets triggering stops, or, you know, just forcing the markets down one way or another, calling clients and getting margin calls and forcing them to sell. I mean, the whole is a whole litany of things we can talk about. So the ups and the upsides is just the opposite. You know, it goes up big, nothing but good news. Everybody jumps in and buys, and maybe the Taiwan semiconductor story today where it's up 30, 40 points and good news right at the top. And, you know, this is how you unload stuff. You know, you're at the very top, you get out when it's up at good news and everybody's panicked in buying versus selling. So long-winded response to your question is, you know, the Bitcoin had a held an opportunity when it shook out $46,000 in a matter of days. In fact, you know, in our Bitcoin, our BlackRock blockchain, I keep stuttering here. We have a blockchain letter. I'm talking about BlackRock. That's the big private money management company run by Larry Fink. But anyway, he was involved with the Bitcoin because he started the IBIT ETF. It was in March of last year, and that was a trigger for the big up move. So we knew the largest money manager on the planet, BlackRock, was starting a new ETF for Bitcoin. The obvious answer was that it was going to go higher. But in any event, you had a big shakeout in the market, and that was a trading opportunity. And for those that took advantage of it, that's a real nice gain for those who were short, $46,000 to the downside, and back up again, $20,000 move in a very volatile crypto. So what's going to happen here? Well, we'll see if it takes out 100. The charts sort of say that's the resistance level, and we just have to watch it here because we've established an important range for Bitcoin, 80 to 126, and it's a big range. So what happens in the course of the year probably depends on while legislation is still in front of Congress, there's a Clarity Act. There's things happening which got delayed apparently a few days, supposed to happen sometime in January. Hasn't happened yet. So there's still this pending legislation which will open up the crypto market for the bulls. And we'll see if that pans out. But if you're looking strictly at the charts on Bitcoin, if it gets back to that 126,000, sky's the limit, because that'll really create a buying panic up there. And if it takes out the 80,000 low, then you can argue, well, gee, maybe we're headed down to the 50s or 60s before we go up again. So you got to understand, either you're a trader or you're an investor. And what the lesson we've learned in Bitcoin is you wait for the big move and you act accordingly. And every year or two or less than that, we get these huge shakeouts and everybody gets panicky and talks about it going to zero. And that's when you're supposed to consider jumping in. And it's a huge trading opportunity market for those who have the courage to do it. And you have ETFs like IBIT, ticker symbol, and GBTC out there that allow you to trade as a stock. So you don't actually have to go in there and do the Bitcoins. You have, your vehicles that allow you to take advantage of the volatility. Now, on our blockchain letter, which I was meant to mention a few months ago, in early November, we had a little sell signal in the Bitcoin. It looked like it was coming down. There was no indication at that moment that it was going to drop to $80,000, but it said we hit a top and we're going to get a correction. So in our blockchain letter, we actually sold all the ETFs and cryptos related to that, saying, hey, we're going to have a correction here, and let's get out. So we got out, and then when we saw this big panic, we jumped back in again. So the charts were telling you something was going on up there, that suddenly, come late October, we hit a top, and we decided let's not take a chance that it's going to be a bigger top. And so we guessed right. But I'm a bull overall. I'm not looking into the end of this market by any stretch. Donald Trump and the U.S. government has a big Bitcoin reserve. They want to get that underway, a crypto reserve underway, the legislation I just referred to, the Clarity Act and others that are before Congress. So, the overall, and again, this could be a multi-year comment, it could be like 2, 3, 4 year comment, but, the wind's at your back in the crypto market. So that's sort of the summary of where we're at as a trader. You know, you're sort of neutral right here because you've already had a big bounce, and we just sort of have to watch and see if it breaks out or not.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovitt right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovitt. Mark, what's going on with copper?
To the moon. Bottom line, it just took off with, all the metals. Copper made a new high in the last 24 hours. It's off a tiny bit today. If you look at the big name stocks like Freeport McMoRan or Southern Copper, they're doing great. In fact, Southern Copper actually made a new high today. Freeport did yesterday. Of course, Freeport's part gold, as well as copper, but, The whole metals group. I mean, you know, despite the little shakeout we had in silver here in the last 24 hours or so, it bounced back. We'll see if, as I mentioned earlier, whether we get more of a correction there. But all the metals and mining stocks, rare earth issues, platinum and palladium, copper, all kinds of metals. Just a metal-driven move, and it's also, I guess, a diversification for those looking for hard assets and alternatives to the equity market. But I think it's value-driven. You know, the need for these materials, the shortages that apparently exist or perceived to exist, and I think it's. It's still an uptrend. Even uranium, I mean, the same story with uranium. Cameco, which is the big name in that sector, the last three days posted a new record high around 113. It was like a $20-$30 stock a year and a half ago. So demand for uranium. Lithium has also been strong. So we just can't find anything in the metals area or the resource area that's negative. And one of the reasons that crude oil started to pop a little bit was the analysis, I think, that I brought to our listeners' attention last week, is that on an inflation-adjusted basis, crude oil is way behind all the other commodities, so to speak, and it needed a bit of a catch-up. It was way overdone to the downside. So, you know, it takes, energy to do all this mining and all this resource exploration, and crude oil is part and parcel to the cost process. And, you know, apparently, we still don't have as much available crude oil as we think we have. So there's apparently, I wouldn't say there's shortages out there, but there's enough to create demand. So that may be part and parcel to the rally in crude, regardless of whether we have further conflicts with Iran or Venezuela or any other part of the world. So it's interesting times for the resources. And we do have the metal resource letter, which is one of our products, in addition to the blockchain letter that I mentioned a few moments ago. So we try to cover many of those other markets. You know, it's really crazy in terms of, what other ways out there to play, the metal sector. I mean, little stock out there that we had on our list, that the antimony business, we don't even think of that as a metal or as a resource, but it is, and that's been moving up a little bit. So, nickel, antimony, zinc, the whole kit and caboodle, at some point you get your shakeouts, but the trend is your friend. So I think this is part and parcel to the forecast for this year, How's the market going to play out, and when are we going to get that little shakeout, which is inevitable, and try to trade it accordingly?
Anything on the geocosmic front that's interesting? I did watch the arrival of the astronauts from the space station live last night, early in the morning, off the California coast.
Right. They came down off San Diego.
Yeah.
And the story there, as you recall, is that we had a medical evacuation situations. Now, I don't know if all of them were sick. From the reading I I saw there was only one sick astronaut, but apparently it took all four of them down. And, you know, I guess there was fear of contagion, or maybe others were sick, but they were able to get them down pretty quickly. The other story that I came across today in the, since you brought up the geomagnetic situation, apparently during a geomagnetic storm that we saw back last year, the study came out saying that during that storm, I think it was around May 10th or 13th, the disturbances in the Earth's atmosphere were so great that they affected aircraft, particularly GPS aircraft flying over Europe. And apparently, for some period of time, the planes disappeared, and they weren't even at the location they were supposed to be, according to the tracking that occurred at the time. So a lot of the sciences are looking at this now. You know, we always talk about geomagnetics and cosmic flares, and people say, well, what the heck does that have to do with me? Well, you know, if you were in an airplane, they may have lost you, and you may not end up going to where you're going or even get there safely. So there was an acute problem there with the X-5-8 class solar flares that hit the Earth at that time. And if we get a big solar storm, you might want to reconsider flying at that time, because instead of just affecting Starlink satellites and all other things, apparently it interferes with aircraft. And it only makes sense when you think about it. I mean, geomagnetic storms creating auroras on the planet and all these things, you got to think they would affect all kinds of electronics everywhere. So that's sort of the real interesting, geocosmic story today that I came across.
Mark, always fun chatting with you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.